there, Green Future Growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I am just thrilled to introduce my featured guest today because, one, we connected because I met his wife at a webinar we were attending hosted by John Lee Dumas, who Michelle and I both love because he taught me how to podcast. And then we were at the webinar, the guy wanted a product and she happened to come on and talk about she and her husband have this business selling compost tumblers. And so I managed to reach out and connect with them. So here from New Jersey to talk to us is Java from Java's Compost. So welcome to the show today, Java.
Thank you.
So
thank you
go
for
ahead
having,
and
having me.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, let's see. Well, you know, I live in the Northeast. My wife and I, and you know, our three children, and we currently reside in New Jersey, in I guess kind of northeastern region of New Jersey, we own a little company called Java's Compost. We basically offer two services. One is a do-it-yourself option. And I can go into a little bit of background in terms of how we got here at some, you know, but basically the do-it-yourself option is we have like a starter kit where we have kind of set up a set of items that a backyard composter or a home composter might want, just to kind of keep things simple. And you know, we just want to kind of set up a system for people, because a lot of times when your steps are not clear, it's easy to get, you know, kind of thrown off in your composting efforts. And because there are so many people who started, and at some point, you know, just the system just kind of breaks down for different reasons. And so we, you know, it includes a tumbler, it also includes, you know, a square rectangular shaped bucket that fits easily under the sink or, you know, in the corner someplace. It also includes a countertop. These are obviously, they're all optional. So if a person says, well, you know, I have a composter already in the backyard, you know, that's fine. We'll work with whatever system they have or whatever system they want. And along with that, is also the option for an orientation. And it's basically an hour long orientation that goes over the how to's, you know, the do's and don'ts of composting in your backyard. What can you compost, you know, how, you know, what are the important steps, important, you know, things to keep in mind about the recipe. You know, so we'll kind of just make sure that people are, well, you know, well educated or better educated. And, you know, so that, you know, they know that whatever happens, you can always remedy your system if something comes up. You know, and the things that come up can be, you know, smell or pests or things like that. So we have the DIY option, and then we also have a full service option.
Okay, but I love this because I like that it includes the orientation, because a lot of people, like, that's the other thing. I've been getting so many questions lately about, because I've been working on like creating a garden course. And like, to me, the first step is automatically building soil health and building compost. Cause
yeah,
I think building compost right. is really easy, but I've had a lot of people saying, oh, I tried that. Oh, it was a mess. Oh, I didn't like that. So I think this is great. I think you should do a webinar on your orientation for people.
Yeah. You know, we actually have been talking about for a while, you know, how can we kind of digitize this whole thing where we have, you know, the resources that we make available in a, you know, in terms of the strategies or techniques or whatever, you know, how do we make them available for a broader audience? And so we just have not had a chance to get around to it yet, but that's definitely, you know, that's part of the plan, hopefully, God willing. Yes.
Sure, because, but it all comes in stages, I feel like, and just, it just takes a long time. So I think what you're doing is great. Yeah. So tell listener, well, first let's go back, because I always, like, my very first question I always ask everybody is like, tell us about your first gardening experience. Like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? Like, what'd you grow? Was it a landscape, or did you grow any food? Or, like, tell us about your original experience.
Yeah. Well, you know, interestingly, you know, I don't have a ton of gardening experience, but my first exposure was as a small boy. You know, I grew up in San Francisco, California, till I was about 15. And when I was probably 4 or 5 years old, we had this backyard area and with a sandbox and so on. And my mother, who, interestingly, when she was in her late teens, lived on a farm, a commune, out in West Virginia. And I can't remember the name of the farm, but I don't think it's in existence anymore. And, you know, she picked up some kind of farm gardening, experience, I guess. And so she decided to, you know, plant some, you know, simple vegetables and stuff like that. And, you know, I would go out there with her occasionally, and I don't know how long her garden lasted. I don't know. I don't remember specifically what she grew, if it was tomatoes or anything, but I do remember going out there and feeling like, wow, this is pretty neat, that I didn't know that you could grow food in your backyard. You know, most kids, we grow up thinking you get food at your local, you know, produce shop or, you know, corner store or whatever.
Uh-huh.
That's right. That's right. So, and that was my first exposure. Then we actually had some family friends up in Northern California, further north, up in the Covelo area. And they had like a small homestead. And that was a very powerful experience, even though I think we may have gone up there once or twice. And it just left a lasting impression there. You know, they had animals that they were managing, and they just were doing all of the little things that a homestead does, churning their own butter and, you know, having their own cream and things like that. And I just remember the idea of being able to kind of do those things, whether it was gardening or, you know, some kind of basic animal husbandry. I mean, the beauty, the magic almost of that, you know, really stuck with me. And it's just been, you know, over the course of time, it's been mostly circumstances and, you know, time and so on that has either allowed us to do, you know, some gardening or kind of prevented us from doing as much as we'd like. So that's kind of, those are my early experiences to kind of growing your own food and, you know, kind of a little bit of self-sufficiency. And then, you know, to be perfectly honest, you know, I still feel like I'm probably about as close to doing all of that myself as I was when I was 5 or 6, in terms of, you know, being able to actually spend a good chunk of time, you know, doing any of these things. But that is our hope, and certainly my desire is to be able to do more of that in the future. We've had some time when we lived in another town. The demands on our time were a little bit different. Our kids were much younger, and we joined the community garden for 5 years, and that was fantastic. You know, I'd bring my boys down there to help me manage our plot, and, you know, when everything was really popping, you know, all of our beets were coming up, and string beans and cabbage and, you know, tomatoes, and I mean, all these beautiful things, and the magic of seeing that stuff on your kitchen table, everybody was like pretty impacted by that. And for the last 3.5 years, we're now in a new town, and so we haven't had an opportunity to get started again. But again, God willing, that's one of our hopes.
Well, you know what? I almost feel like this is more impactful that way, because you're talking about composting, and you're composting even though you don't have a full-fledged, you know, because so many people think, I'm not growing vegetables, why would I compost? So I did want to ask you, when I don't know if I interrupted, which I'm trying so much harder not to do, because I was actually interviewed the other day, which I'm rarely ever interviewed, and that I felt like the host kept interrupting me. And so now I understand what people are talking about when they're like, you keep interrupting your guests. But so tell us a little bit more about how your business works. So there's like, can do it. There's the do it yourself, but then you also have like composting services for other people, right?
Yeah. Well, so the full service is where we provide the same kit. You know, you get a tumbler, you get a bucket and a countertop bin. But the difference is that we take care of all the actual composting responsibilities. So the only thing that the family of the full service option does is they just scrape their plates and, you know, clean out their fridges or whatever they're doing to reroute their food scraps. They just put all that in the bucket that we provide them. That bucket is put out once a week, similar to their garbage. And we take that bucket and we bring it around back and we manage everything on their property. So they get 100% of the finished material, and with minimal work. And so that's the full service option. And, you know, you can get a significant amount of material that way. We have, if you're in a 4 or 5 member family and you're producing somewhere like, you know, let's say, you know, upwards of 5 gallons or more a week, you're filling up your bucket, you know, to the top basically once a week, that's over 1,000 pounds of food scraps every year for that family, which ends up, you know, you break it down, it ends up being somewhere between, you know, 200 pounds and, you know, 250 pounds per person, which is actually the EPA average that they have listed on their website for food waste per person. And so when we've done our data collection, it's really fascinating that it's really come out just around their number. Their number is 241 pounds per person or something like that. And our numbers run around the same. So you can get a lot of material. And then, you know, if by the end, you're probably looking at anywhere between 500, 600, 700 pounds of finished material over the course of a year that a family has at their disposal. They can put it in their gardens, their vegetable gardens. They could put it on their landscaping. They can do lawn applications. These are other services that we also offer. So if they want a lawn application, you know, we can do that. If they want, you know, landscaping application, we can do that as well. So those are the other services that we offer.
Yeah, I wish you were here where I live in gardens, or where my mom's at, because her neighbors could do this. And I think it would help people to take all of that out of that. And the other thing I love is like your photos, like everything is so clean looking and it doesn't look messy, which is like been a big complaint I've been getting. Oh, it's so messy. Oh, it's so gross. And I think because it is in those larger buckets, it kind of helps it not get so grimy altogether. I mean, it's still gonna, but then, you know, cleaning it out and then doing the thing in the back. So what I'm curious about then though, but so that's the food way. But what about, like, do you mix it in with, like, grass clippings or leaves or what, like, how does that work?
Yeah. So what we, you know, the tumbler that we use for the most part has been the Joraform composter. And that, the manufacturers recommended carbon input, or the dry material, is wood pellets, which is basically used for horse bedding. And it's a soft wood, I think it's pine, which is collected, I believe, at lumber yards. And, you know, from the sawdust, they pelletize it. And it's incredibly effective and very efficient. And so that is the carbon input, if you will. That's the dry component that we put into every batch of compost. Or every week, in fact, what we do, and this is what we tell the do-it-yourself customers as well. We tell them, you know, work out your ratios beforehand. So if you know you're going to have a 5-gallon full bucket, fill up the first, you know, fraction of the bucket with a certain amount of, you know, I'd say, like, you know, maybe fill it up 1/4 or 1/5 of the way with wood pellets. And where, you know, and that changes the ratio. You know, typically you look online or you do some reading, you know, the typical ratio is 2 or 3 to 1 dry material to wet material, or browns to greens, right? So you typically have more of your carbon-rich material than your nitrogen-rich material.
Right.
So, but when you're using the wood pellets, because it's pelletized and it's really condensed, when it's exposed to moisture, it expands. So I think in the manufacturer's brochure, I'm pretty sure it says something like carbon to nitrogen or dry to wet is 1 to 10 when you're using the wood pellets, right? You see how that's a significant reversal to the extreme of the amount of, you know, carbon that you normally put in, amount of dry material you normally put in. The difference, though, is that you, you know, it expands a lot. And what we typically do, we don't go with a 1 to 10. We do more of a either 1 to 4 or 1 to 5. And we have found that, you know, for example, when a customer or family is just starting out, we encourage them to use more than less. So we'll say, why don't you do 25% of, you know, your bucket with wood pellets for the first 2 weeks. You know, the second 2 weeks, do 20%. And then if you want to scale back, you can use less and less. So you're dealing with, you know, smaller ratios or fractions, and, you know, maybe you're so, but once you get a good healthy buildup of carbon in there, you know, that will help to mitigate odors and attracting pests and stuff like that. And so we have found that it's a very, very effective way of you know, managing your compost bins, or piles or whatever. Obviously you can also use wood chips. Over the years, we've kind of, in our own composting efforts, we have used a mix of just wood chips and wood pellets. And then years ago, we would just save up all our paper bags from the local grocery store. And I'd, you know, every couple of weeks I'd go through and spend, you know, a half hour, 40 minutes, you know, shredding countless numbers of paper bags and adding that to the compost bin. But when you have a ready supply of either wood chips or wood pellets, it just makes it easier to manage in terms of the labor that you have to put into. The only down part is that, you know, the more labor intensive dry material is which is the more the free dry material, you know, paper bags, junk mail, is much more labor intensive. The very efficient and super simple to use materials require a little bit more effort to access. Either you have to find a tree guy or a neighbor somewhere who's got a supply of wood chips because they just got a tree taken down on their property. That's a real hit or miss. Or you have to pay some money for the wood pellets. So, you know, you've got your pros and cons for these different carbon components. But we try to tell people, you know, all the options. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in this day and age, because people are so busy in terms of adding to your food scraps, a lot of times they'll just go with the one that's simplest and requires the least amount of time and labor. And that happens to be the wood pellets.
I can't remember if you said it or if I read it on your website earlier, people are buying the finished product anyway. They're buying the compost. They end up spending a lot of money to buy it if they want to put that on their lawn later. So it's either buy it before and why not use. I mean, you're talking about a lot of waste here, like 1,000 pounds a year. That's a lot of quality compost dirt. And one of the biggest things on my show we've talked about is getting access to quality dirt and soil. So
that's right.
I think probably, you know, if you did the numbers, maybe it would come out, it could come out cheaper, it could come out just a little more, but at least it's, you know, local, you know what you're getting, it's yours. There's so many benefits to it. Do you want to tell listeners, because I know what the tumblers look like, because I've been to your website and it's so cool looking. Do you want to tell people a little bit about the tumbler itself? Because did it come from like Sweden or somewhere like cool?
Yeah. The Joraform. That's right. It was designed in Sweden. It's manufactured in China. It was designed in Sweden back in, I think, 92 or 94, there was some claim to them being one of the first, if not the first, tumbler. I'm sure that somebody can find, you know, evidence to the contrary of that. But that's something that I read in their material. Whether they were, you know, one of the first or whether they've just kind of created a really nice version, I don't know for sure, but it is a very nice looking piece of equipment. It's galvanized steel with a kind of weather resistant paint, which is a kind of nice olive green color. It also has insulation. There's a styrofoam insulation, which is polyethylene, so it's food grade styrofoam. And not polystyrene. Polystyrene is the stuff that is outlawed in California for use with food materials and serving trays and stuff. So it's not a harmful material. And it's also a very, in terms of the design, it's very simple to manage in terms of, you know, the turn on it is super easy. We've used many different types of tumblers. You know, we have some old tumblers in our own backyard, and we have seen, you know, kind of the difference between these different models. And what I like to tell people is that, you know, there's so many different ways to compost and so many different tumblers on the market. And, you know, I really try not to discourage anybody from, you know, utilizing whatever tumbler option they feel like is most appropriate to their situation, whether it's a cost factor or just some preference, you know, for one system or one brand over another. You know, I think you can be pretty flexible with that. What we went with the Joraform because it had, you know, really great reviews when you looked online. People who had been, you know, who were gardeners, you know, backyard gardeners seemed to be raving about what they were getting from it. And they were reaching really high temperatures, you know, 140, 150. A couple of people were claiming 160 and above, probably depending on the season. And it wasn't completely dependent on being in direct sunlight, for example, because of the insulation. Most people know this already, but you know, the heat generated in a compost pile is really generated within it, right? It's not It's not due to, you know, the sunshine per se, but it's due to the microbiology, right? So in large part. And so I think, well, hold on a second. I'm just losing my train of thought here.
No worries.
I'm not sure. I was really speaking to you. I wasn't. I want to make sure I'm not getting off the question topic.
This is all great because yeah. Some people like maybe don't even know that your compost has to heat up, and then the fact that it does it in this tumbler is nice. And like I really like I was saying on your Facebook site, like you had pictures of like you could see what it looks like inside of it. You showed what the compost that comes out of it, and then I like the way it's like designed.
Oh, yeah.
It's got things that you open on top, plus it's up so there's no bending, and then it looks like there's like some kind of thing that comes down off the bottom to unload it, so you're not having to like shovel like out of, like, it doesn't look awkward. It looks like it's really well designed for ease of use.
Right So yeah, that's the reason why we opted to carry the Joraform tumbler.
Hey, can you spell Joraform for me? Is it like J-O-R?
Yeah, it's J-O-R-A-F-O-R-M. F as in Frank, R-O-M as in Mary, yeah.
And sorry, I didn't mean to make you lose your train of thought. Mm-hmm. It looks like it has like two compartments. Like, is that right? There's like a compartment on the left
where
it has fresh scraps, and then the other side where. Yep. How does that work?
Yep. Well, so what we had done prior is we had in our own backyard, we had two tumblers. And the reason why is because, as most people who compost in their backyards know, and you get one tumbler, you're filling it, and then you're trying to figure out, well, when can I use this stuff? Because I've got these half, you know, broken down onions and carrots and all the rest of the stuff. And man, you know, having to sort through all that just to get some handfuls of finished material, it just seems kind of like, you know, not that inviting. And so, you know, we had two so that we could fill one up, and when that was full, we would close it, keep turning it, and then we would just start filling the other one. When we found the Joraform, it was a nice remedy to that issue because it has two compartments built in. And so that allows you, in terms of the concept of being able to always compost, it allows you to do the same thing. You just fill up one compartment, and as soon as that's done, you close it, and you start filling up the other one. And what's great about it is that both chambers are always getting turned. So you're constantly feeding the chamber with oxygen. Even if it's the chamber that you're not adding anything into, you're still getting oxygen in there to fuel the bacterial population in there that's helping to break down all that organic matter. So I think the design is really great. What I also didn't mention before is in terms of I don't know if you want to call it an improvement, but it's all metal, and most of the tumblers that people have are industrial grade plastic with metal hardware. And that's, I think, probably the most common tumbler in people's backyards. But what people will find after, you know, maybe about 2 or 3 years, the materials start to separate. So the locks will start to come, kind of tear away from the plastic. The hinges will start to do the same. Bolts will start to pop out from the plastic. And, you know, and then being able to make repairs on these things, from what we were reading, is not that easy in terms of, you know, getting materials. You know, some people are handier than others, but the nice thing about the Joraform is that it's all metal on metal, and so the materials won't have the same, you know, they don't start, the hardware, the latches don't start pulling away from the panels that they're attached to, the hinges don't, you know, they hold up well over time. So that's another, I think, kind of plus to the Jorah form and why we opted to go with it. And again, it's not, you know, you could always say, you know, I don't know if there's one system that's perfect, you know, but, you know, in terms of urban and suburban composting, we felt like this was a pretty good option.
You've really done your research into what people like, what troubles they had, and you came up with this and went with it because it seems like it's had the best reviews and the best. And then also, like, I've really been thinking, like, while I've been here visiting my mom, is like, maybe recycling plastic has almost made us lazy as far as like innovations and other things. Now that, because in Montana, they quit taking plastic in January, I think. So I can't recycle plastic there. So I am like on this big, like, try not to use plastic. I'm so much more conscious. You know, I've always tried not to use it, but I've always felt like, because I see here already, it's like, oh, I can just throw it in the bin. Oh, I can just throw it in the bin. And I always thought recycling. And now I'm starting to wonder, does that make us lazy in finding other solutions? And just, you know, so many things come in plastic. And just like, so anywhere we cannot use that plastic to begin with. You know, and also there's also, like you were saying, that I hadn't really thought about before, you know, they're always telling me, don't recycle your plastic bottles. Don't, like, I'm notorious for like getting a plastic bottle, filling it up with water, sticking to my freezer and reusing that plastic bottle for months. And my husband was like, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be doing that. They say, don't do that. And so I think, you know, like you said, compost is, you're putting it, you know, back into the earth. It's something maybe we don't want it touching that plastic to begin with. So, and then also, I just think it's sleek looking, elegant. If you're going to have a tumbler in your backyard. Oh, yeah. And then the other thing I was just going to quickly touch on is my husband and I are constantly like, we have one compost pile that I love right outside my kitchen. And then we have another one that's like down by the garden, and we go back and forth that same way, because when the one gets full, he'll always be like, don't throw anything in there. I told you, we're saving that. It's getting ready to go in the garden. Go use the other one down below. And sometimes he'll even empty it for me so I can just start over in the top one. So, but that's so true that you, cause it does, you know, there's a certain time where it has to finish its decomposing and do its processes where you want to stop adding fresh material to it. And I don't know. I always say, I think I was part rabbit in another lifetime, because I seem to create more, you know, compost. Like, my mom's like, I can't believe how much compost we've created just since you've been here this week.
Yeah, that's right. It's pretty remarkable just how much organic material, you know, a lot of people know this also, but something like close to 50% of all the garbage that is produced in our country is compostable. And, you know, probably roughly 30%, some estimates say 20, some say 30, are just food. So, you know, you've got a lot of material out there that is, you know, organic, and will break down and, you know, will provide food for bacteria that will then provide a material that we can use to enrich our soils. And, you know, so there's a ton of it around in our homes, you know, just kind of flowing through our day-to-day routines. You know, the question is, you know, how do we learn to make whatever adjustments we need to make lifestyle-wise and just in terms of how we think, to make sure that we're rerouting those waste streams so that they're not wasted, right? And so one of the phrases that we use, I think my wife may have come up with this, is don't waste your waste. And you know, a lot of people don't even like to call food scraps waste, which I definitely I agree that it isn't. It's not a waste. It's not garbage. It's actually this incredible resource that the nature of food and organic material is that whatever's wasted is not meant to be put into a, you know, a system where it doesn't get to break down and feed into the soil again. It's that's part of its design, and it's the way that I understand the Creator made organic material so that there isn't waste, right? So that these things we typically throw, you know, food scraps into our garbage pail with, you know, with plastic bags and, you know, whatever other items that we put in there that are not organic and won't break down, at least not in a few lifetimes. And, you know, and that's not where you're going to get, you know, the finished material that you're supposed to. And so anyway, I think it is going to require a change in how we think about it, but there is it's a rich resource, and kind of retraining ourselves to think of our food scraps in the way that we think of like regular recycling. I think you're exactly right. Like everybody knows to put your plastics or specific plastics, right? You want to look at the code and all that kind of stuff to make sure. And now it's even more limited, but you know, people know to put certain of their plastic items in their recycling bin. But it took years and years for us to get to the point as a society that where it becomes second nature, right? You don't, in many homes, you don't even think twice. And we are way behind in terms of organics, in terms of how we think about it, you know? You know, I think obviously it's people are talking about it. Backyard gardeners have been thinking about this forever. But now, you know, as the environmental impact of, you know, our habits becomes more well known, and the benefits of rerouting what is commonly wasted, you know, in terms of organics, and putting them back into your own properties, or, you know, maybe a municipally sponsored pickup service or whatever it might be. You know, now that we're becoming more educated, I think as a society and also as a planet, you know, I think people are we're in a better position now to make some adjustments in terms of our lifestyle, our habits, our willingness to make some effort to you know, to get our organic material, you know, back into the ground, you know, where it belongs when it's finished.
And like one thing I learned, like I didn't realize, like I actually think if you put those organic parts into your regular garbage, it actually like somehow creates like some kind of toxic thing that's released that's actually really bad that you put that in there. That's hazardous for all our health. But
oh, that's right. Well, yep.
I wanted to ask you, like, so I was seeing somewhere, like, you had a thing about like sharing with your neighbors, like maybe like with three people chipped in together and bought a tumbler together. Yeah. Like, how does that work? Because a lot of my guests, Java, are or a lot of my listeners are people who are already composting. And one of the reasons I reached out to Michelle is I think people would be interested in learning about your service, because a lot of my listeners like are green, I call them green future growers, because they, even if they don't have a garden, like, you know, necessarily they're interested in creating a green, or maybe if they're not market farmers, like they have seed businesses or education businesses, or they have businesses like your, you know, or even selling organic ice cream or, you know, value added products. Like, so people will be interested in the business side of this too. But first answer, or talk a little bit about the communal, was it called communal composting or something, or were you neighbors joined together? Yeah. I like that part too.
Yeah. Well, so what we found out in speaking to a couple of municipalities out here in our area is that, so there's regulations here in our state that prevent what they call third party organics. So you can't cross property lines with organics. Everything either has to be processed on your own property. Everything that you generate as a family has to either be processed on your property, or it has to go to whatever garbage hauler is contracted to do it. And it has to be brought to a licensed facility. If it leaves your property, it has to be brought to a licensed facility, which is either a landfill or a licensed composting facility. And to compost organics, all organics, including food scraps, is a different license than just to compost, let's say, yard debris, right? Wood pieces and you know, gardening
things,
debris and grass and stuff like that. Yeah. So what we found is we don't have a lot of composting commercial options here. So we actually only have one that is in the state that's creating finished compost. We have another one that is really a waste treatment plant, and they're working, I think, with some towns on kind of a pilot program to reroute their organics and to work it through the wastewater management system, or the treatment system. So with the communal composting option, when we spoke to a couple of the towns, or the mayors or the representatives who were able to answer the question, they said it would be okay to cross property lines if you had a shared composting unit. So, and we actually had to go and talk to the New Jersey DEP about this as well. And they rerouted us to the fact that this was kind of a locally decided issue. And so we have a 100-gallon composter. It's actually a 106-gallon composter. And the capacity is significantly higher. And it could accommodate, you know, maybe three families who were pretty aggressive with their composting. And the towns that we had a chance to speak to said it would be fine to do that. And it's a fantastic option because it allows, you know, kind of, I think what you're hinting at, you know, you might have one person who's very ambitious and has some good experience and a lot of confidence about managing compost. And you might have a couple of other families that are really interested, really believe in it, but are just not as confident and need a little bit of help, you know, along the way. And you can pair these people together. And, you know, we offer it both as a do-it-yourself option, where we'll set the people up. We also assemble the tumblers and deliver them. So we'll do all of that. Take the different families through the orientation and kind of help them work out the logistics of how best to manage their shared unit. Or, you know, it also fits into our full service as well. Unfortunately, nobody has taken us up on this yet. So we've had a few people who have really kind of looked into it. But I think the idea of sharing a unit does require that people are going to kind of really be on the same page, because you've got rotting food, you know, and some responsibility for making sure that it's taken care of. And if you've got a good portion of it, you want to make sure that you've got the help that you think you might need. And so I think it's a great option. In fact, we were just talking with some people at a local town environmental committee the other night. And there were people in that audience that really liked the idea, and a couple of people that were already doing something similar to that, but not perhaps as aggressive as we would like to encourage people to become. We want to help people to recycle 100% of their food scraps. So if you've got three families, there's a potential of, you know, upwards of, you know, 3,000 pounds of food scraps in a year. And you know, translate that into, you know, you probably have got, you know, almost 2,000 pounds approximately, or, you know, between 1,500 and 2,000 pounds of finished compost a year that those three families can draw from for whatever purposes. They can donate it to the local community gardens. They can apply it to their lawns and vegetable gardens and so on, as I mentioned before. I think it's a fantastic idea. And we have it there because we have it up on our website because we want people to consider it. And it also shares the responsibility, which I think can be helpful for some people who don't quite feel ready to take on the responsibility themselves.
Yeah. And then you also have one that's like for schools, right? Or like hospitals or places that have cafeterias, right? There's like a super large one.
Yeah. So the super large one, that actually is among the three that we carry of the Jora form composters. That's the same one that would be a shared unit. And we've set up schools and after school programs in the communities around us with these. Yep, and they have a much higher capacity. And you know, I think it's a great opportunity for kids to get involved in both this situations recently. So we had one at a local charter school. They have two of them, and so we had an opportunity to go in and meet with their science department, because they wanted to integrate the composting initiative into their curriculum. So we made a presentation and kind of talked about some of the ways that they could do that. And then, you know, meeting with their facilities person. And so there are some, so these have a greater capacity. Also, one was at a local kind of community center where they have classes, and they actually serve snacks in the afternoon to the kids there. And, you know, so there, what do you do with the waste from all the fruits and stuff that are being handed out? And so they got one of our large units and were using, you know, and really came, and it was really used quite a bit. So these are, we want people to consider these. We also have talked to a number of, you know, small cafes and stuff like that. Again, in New Jersey, it's very difficult with the regulations being as they are. So there are some limits. But if things begin to change, then you could have, you know, local bakeries and, you know, very small restaurants composting all their own material, and, you know, doing some great stuff with it. But currently, for example, one of the rules are that you have to use all of the finished material on the premises if you're a business. And so that limits it. There's not a lot of real estate, some of these, you know, food producers, commercial.
That seems.
Yeah. So that's difficult. There is one
city.
It's very challenging. Yes. Very challenging. There are one or two exemptions that you can apply for, but it so far it's been a little bit more challenging than I think some people, you know, some business owners want it to be. And sure. So there hasn't been a lot of traction there, but there's been a huge amount of interest up front. But when people find out kind of the hoops you have to jump through, they become discouraged, understandably so. So we're also trying to, you know, work with some other people to explore ways that maybe some of the regulations can be modified in situations like very small food producers, like, you know, small restaurants and cafes.
Can I ask a question about you, because you said your goal is to collect 100% of food waste, but like there's things that you don't put in, there's food like, you know, like butters and meats and things, right? Or can you put that in these things or?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So what we typically tell people in our personal view is it really depends on the system that you're going to use. So, you know, a lot of times in a backyard system, some people are just throwing stuff in a pile, you know. And so when you're talking about dairies, you're talking about fats, you're talking about proteins or meats, these things take a longer time to break down than your typical fruits and vegetables. And so that means that the odor is going to linger longer if it's not well taken care of. The truth is, and most people know this also, that if you have a poorly managed compost pile of just fruits and vegetables, it's going to get really bad smelling, you know, if it's
yeah, because then it's more like just decaying food. It's not really composting and it's not really working the way it's supposed to, right?
Exactly. Well, you know, it all is decaying. So one is an anaerobic environment, and that's a decay. It's a different set of bacteria. It's a slower process. It's cooler than and it's also produces these offensive odors, at least to our noses, right? Raccoons love it.
Yeah.
Rats love it. Yeah. Even dogs love it. Oh man. So what we try to tell people is, you know, if you're willing to make sure that your pile is managed well, anything that is organic, anything that was previously a living organism can be composted. So, that includes your meats, your dairies, that includes fats. So for those people who, you know, eat meats, there's grease or things that are left over. All that is biodegradable, totally natural, and will be broken down by the microbiology. So we just tell people the same tips that you use for creating a good compost pile that's just fruits and vegetables. That's exactly the same steps that you have to take for meats, dairies, and fats. So you want to make sure that they're in small pieces. You know, you don't want to just throw out a rotten steak and, you know, a quarter pound, half a pound of meat and just toss it in there. It's going to get pretty terrible. You know, the smell is going to be pretty bad and you're going to end up attracting flies and all the rest. But if you cut it down as if you were preparing a stir fry or something like that, then, and you mix it in again with all of your other material, your other food scraps, your dry material, that's one of the most important parts, is making sure that you have an adequate supply of carbon rich material, and as well as an oxygen rich environment, right? So that's really the key. Are you cutting up the material small enough, right? That's even with your cheeses and your yogurts, is it small enough in its portions, and mixed in well enough with the dry material? And is it being turned enough to get oxygen in there? If there's no oxygen, then it's just going to be a terrible smelly mess. But again, that's not because there's meat in there. It's not because there's cheese in there. It's because there's not a lot of oxygen and there's not enough carbon rich material. So we do typically, and we've learned, you know, how to manage that. We've learned the importance of making sure that you've got an adequate supply of carbon material. So we tend to be pretty aggressive with our carbon input. And again, we start in our kitchen. You know, our buckets have a good portion of carbon-rich material in it, whether it's the wood chips or the wood pellets. We put that in there from the very beginning. It absorbs the moisture as the rest of the food is in there and breaking down. It mitigates odor even in your kitchen. And then it's your carbon input when you dump it. Makes cleaning out the bucket easier.
We say
100%, you can do 100%. You don't have to, it's totally up to you. But we try to help people understand the reason for the precautions that, you know, are commonly put out there by backyard composting, you know, information resources. They're there for a good reason, because a lot of times people don't, put the effort into really taking care of their compost pile. But, you know, we also want to let them know that there are options. You can, there is a way to recycle all of it.
Java, thank you so much for sharing all of this today. So I know you probably are busy and we've been talking for a really long time. Like, are there any things we didn't touch on that you really wanted to talk about or anything we missed?
No, I'm not sure that there, not necessarily, no. You know, it's, I'm certainly, I think we're very, you know, excited that, you know, composting is, becoming a, you know, a much more kind of familiar idea. Many more people than, you know, many more people are willing and interested in learning about it and trying it out. And we just want to help as many people as we can see that you can do it. It's not as difficult as you might otherwise think. And there's always a way to remedy a quote unquote bad pile. It's just a chemistry issue, and you can really, you can always address bad smells. If you see that there's a pest pressure there's always ways to remedy and get it back to, you know, where you want it to be. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Tell everybody how to find you or how to connect with you.
Yeah. So we have a Facebook page. I believe it's Java's Compost. Yep. And you probably can just punch that in there. We also have a website, javascompost.com. We may have a Instagram. My wife actually does a lot of the tech stuff. But we've been kind of slow with that initiative. But that's the way to get in touch with us. Our contact information is there. Again, we're currently, you know, based in New Jersey and, you know, in the northeastern area of New Jersey. But that's how you get in touch with us. Yeah.
Yeah. You have an Instagram account.
Okay, good. Okay.
No, just the listeners know, because I know Instagram's big these days, but I know how hard it goes, the social media thing. And so, but as Instagram gets bigger, what I love now is Instagram came up with Instagram TV. So you can post videos that are more than like 15 seconds or whatever. You can post them that are up to 10 minutes. So
I'm really into
Instagram TV. And it's so much easier than uploading to YouTube. I mean, I wouldn't say so much easier, but for me, it seems easier than uploading to YouTube. So, well, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your passion and just everything that you're doing to help the environment and your kids have a nicer life and the schools. I mean, I see, like, it's so obvious on your website how into educating and teaching and just doing your part to make our world a greener place. So thanks so much for sharing with us today, Java.
Well, thanks a lot, Jackie. It was my pleasure. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you have a great day. Hey there, Green Future Growers. Would you like your friends and neighbors to create an organic oasis too? Would you like others in your area to learn about earth-friendly practices for their gardens and yards? If so, we would love it if you would share the Organic Gardener podcast with your local community or college radio station today. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.